Okay, we're just past the 7:30, so I'm going to go ahead and mute all. As usual, everybody will have the ability to unmute themselves. If you have a comment or a question, please remute yourself afterwards. And the contents of the chat and the PDF deck and the audio track will be available on our website later on for your review. And I'd like to welcome all. And if we have any new people with us tonight, welcome to the Ottawa Peace User Group. We do welcome guests at any of our meetings over the Zoom. And if you want to join the group, please do so. Just come to our website and click on the Join or Renew link at the top of the homepage, and that'll take you through to where you can join up. It's only $20 a year. But if you want to continue as a guest, no problem at all. We have a bunch of stuff on the agenda tonight, but I think we will have time for the final 10 or the last 10. So if you have any questions that you haven't sent in advance to suggestionbox@opcug.ca, please think about them now. You can throw them into the chat or ask them live after we go through the agenda. And with that, I'll kick it over to Alan. Alan, take it away.
Chris is stealing all my thunder tonight. Okay, yeah. Welcome everyone. We do have some prepared material, but I think we're going to have time, as Chris said, for the last 10 minutes. So if you have questions, that will be the time to bring them forth. Okay, first of all, I've given Chris slide control, and he has some preliminary information for us.
Yeah, so the... We're going to have a poll tonight, and the reasoning behind this was that we're always looking for new topics at Q&A, things that interest people, and we frequently ask about what people want to learn, and we usually don't get anything coming back, and it may be because people don't know what they don't know. So we are going to have a poll tonight, and it is going to ask you basically – What Alan did was he went to Perplexity AI and he asked, what are the 10 most frequently asked questions about using Windows? And what you see on the screen is what Perplexity AI kicked back. So we'll go through these as we hit into the poll, but just think about, take a quick gander at those topics, and you will be able to choose one or more. All or none of those topics, and we don't promise that we'll actually cover any of them, but if there are a number of people that are interested in a particular topic, we'll certainly look into the possibility of having it covered at a future Q&A. So more coming on that. And if your burning question is not on that list of 10 items, then by all means, email to suggestionbox@opcug.ca, and we'll be happy to consider it.
Okay, thank you very much, Chris. Okay, so we have a few follow-ups from previous Q&As, and one of them was we had this quite a long discussion, very useful information about what kind of websites and things you trust, and especially when you're spending money online. And the follow-up to that came from the person who gave the question in the first place. And the reason was that she had put quite a large deposit on a fairly expensive tour, I understand. And although the tour company looked legitimate, and it seemed as though they'd been in business for several years, and their testimonials were all great, but she wasn't totally convinced by that. So the question was, what do you do about it? And one of the things she found was that if the tour company is in Ontario, you can check with the Travel Industry Council of Ontario. And clearly this is kind of a Better Business Bureau type thing for travel companies, and they'll have information on companies that are registered with them, I guess, or registered in Ontario. And some of the companies work with larger travel companies, and this one is using Trafalgar, so I guess you can check with them. And if the tour that you're taking says that they're going to various hotels, then you can always call the hotel and see if they have been in business with them, I've been collaborating with them for a period, and get some information that way. And similarly, if you're purchasing travel insurance, and this individual asked about the tour operator and the insurance companies that she was inquiring about with, and all knew about this particular tour operator. And in this particular case, the tour is using Air Canada, and so it's possible to find out about the plane schedules and so forth from the airline. So she said, it sounds like overkill, but this is an expensive tour, so it's probably worthwhile doing the research. Anyway, if you're doing a tour and a travel company, there's some things to at least consider.
Those are great ideas.
I think if you're paying money to a travel agent or a tour company in Ontario, then your money is insured by the province of Ontario. I think that may be that tour thing that you mentioned before, that they not only can kind of say how these people are registered or whatever, but also that if they fail to deliver on the total tour, maybe not on details, then you get your money back.
Okay, it's worth knowing. Okay, so next up we have a follow-up. Chris has some information.
Yeah, so at the June 4th Q&A, I did a share on quantum computing with Dave's Garage, and it was kind of interesting, but we had a follow-up question that came to us from Steve Parker. Did Dave mention quantum key? Well, he did not, and so we got some information from Steve. Another video on YouTube, The Race to Harness Quantum Computing's Mind-Bending Power. And if you take a look at that, if you are interested specifically in quantum key, starting about 17 minutes into the video, there is some discussion about what quantum key is all about. So if you're interested in that, take a look.
Okay.
Can I just add something else to it? That one's so interesting. Is it's got to be the most bizarre function of quantum mechanics. I mean, even Einstein was completely baffled by it. His response to it was, well, if nobody's looking at the moon, is it still in orbit around the Earth, or does it disappear? Because that's the whole thing with quantum mechanics. It has completely no connection to what we experience at all. Newtonian physics just completely falls apart. So something changes whether you're looking at it or not. I mean, nobody's got any experience of that, I shouldn't think, have they?
I think it was Richard Feynman who said, if you think you understand quantum mechanics, you
don't. Haven't understood a thing, yeah. That's about right.
Okay, next up. Next up is this one. Windows 10, the end of life, 4 months to go, says Chris Barnett, and has a new video out this week going through various things about the end of life process and what you can and can't do, what you can do, I guess. And had some really interesting information. This graph, for example, and the top line shows you the market share of Windows 10, and the bottom line shows you Windows 11. And you can see that a while ago, that's running from June 2024, so about a year ago, the Windows 10 share was dropping and the Windows 11 share was rising. But now they've seen, in the last couple of months or so, it seems to have plateaued. And interestingly, Windows 10 machines have a 53% share, and Windows 11 only has 43%. So that's kind of an interesting statistic. If that keeps going till the end of time, there's an awful lot of machines that are going to be out of luck in terms of running Windows 10 in future. However, there are things you can do, of course, and here is Chris Barnett's offering everything from do nothing to basically use Linux. And in the video, he points out how easy or difficult and what the risks of these different options are. So if you're in the situation where you haven't upgraded to Windows 11 yet, or especially if you can't upgrade to Windows 11, you've got an old computer that's not supported, then there's lots of good information here. And I'm going to have a follow-up on this in the September meeting. You've seen my series of Trading Up to Linux and the articles in the newsletter, so you kind of know where I'm going. But I'm going to bring all that up to date in September with the latest and greatest information just before Windows runs out of patches. Okay, so now it's time for Chris to take over, and let's run the poll and see what everybody thinks.
Now, this has been a while since I've done a poll, so let me make sure I'm getting the right thing here. Okay, so here's the poll. And so you'll have to scroll down to get it, or I think actually the box is resizable. Yeah, there we go. So I'm hoping that you see all 10 questions. So this, again, was what Perplexity AI came up with as the top questions about Windows. So you can choose any or all of them or none of them, up to you. So installing or upgrading Windows, so installing brand new, fresh, or if you're doing a major upgrade, which Microsoft typically comes out with a major upgrade once a year, then the difference into updating Windows, so just the monthly updates, is there anything special you should be really thinking about there? Do you have trouble starting Windows, like just you try and boot it up and it crashes before it even loads? Are you interested in improving the performance? And now that's a little bit of a given that most people would want things to be faster anyways, but maybe you are running into some real performance problems and need to know how you can improve the situation. Privacy and security is near and dear to my heart, for sure, so if you have any concerns about that, maybe we can have some more presentations along that line. Printers, especially wireless printers, I find to be really quite problematic sometimes, and so are there troubleshooting techniques for that? Your user interface, the desktop, taskbar, start menu, things like that, they're very customizable. And so did you know that? Do you want to know how to customize those items? Managing accounts, do you have an extra account on your computer that is an administrator account in case your administrator account goes south someday that you can still get into Windows without having to reinstall? Backup and recovery is near and dear to my heart as well. Or resetting Windows if things get really flaky. How do you go about doing that? There's a number of options you have. And then installing or uninstalling or troubleshooting programs on your computer. So any of those, check off all of the ones that you're interested in. We've had 11 of 30 people participated so far, so I'll give it another couple of seconds. If anybody else has any questions about those particular items, I'll pipe up now.
Just, you know, I think everybody's figured it out. You can scroll down the box, and I don't think when you resized the box, it didn't
Work
on my machine, but I could just drag a corner and drag it out to full size.
Okay, I thought maybe it translated to the other side, but good to know that it doesn't work that way. And you could actually click that QR code, by the way, at the bottom. It's a little bit of a laborious way of going about doing it, but you could do that on your phone, and then you could answer the poll on your phone. But you can answer it just within the Zoom meeting. Okay, I think we've had a fair amount of time here, so we have 26 total responses. So I'm going to end the poll. Sorry?
It was 27 now.
Oh, okay, 27, yeah. And I'm going to share the results. And so everybody should be able to see what the results are. I will come up, the Zoom site, I can actually come up with a little bit better information than you see right there, although it's pretty simple, this poll. But I will share the information at next week's, and maybe we'll have an idea about some of the things that we think that we can proceed with. And again, if you have anything you'd like to add to the list, Suggestion box at opcug.ca is the place to go. Okay, so I think that's it for the poll.
Okay, thanks, Chris. Okay, so as Chris said, if you've got any other questions that weren't covered there on anything about Windows or computer usage in general, just send us a note to suggestion box at opcug.ca and we'll see what we can do. Okay, next up we have a share from Tom Trottier on a product or packages called Humble Bumble. So Tom, you'll have to unmute and off you go.
Hi, okay. Humble Bundle is a website and they do a variety of things. They're kind of mostly games oriented and developer oriented. And the thing that I look to them for are bundles of software, games, or ebooks, mainly the software or the ebooks. And the ebooks are available in multiple formats, in other words, EPUB, MOBI, PDF, and they don't have any DRM. You can save them in Calibre. And the prices range from $1 USD, to $40 via PayPal. That's for the bundles. The games are a variety of prices. And for the bundles, part of the price is a donation to charity. And important to me is that you can choose the amount to go to charity. You can choose three amounts: to charity, to the publisher who's giving this, and to Humble Bundle for delivering it. And you can see their URL at the bottom. Next. So here are some book bundles that are recent. They may be current or recently. But for example, there are 17 books in this in one bundle, all about AI engineering, learning LangChain, whatever that is, project engineering for large language models, hands-on demonstrative AI, etc. So it's all very technical, but if you want to get into it, these are the things you got to read and play with. And the same thing down below, network security, third edition, zero trust architecture, etc. Basically all kinds of networking stuff. It says 17 books and 18 books, but you can, for the 17 or 18 books, you spend about between $30 and $40 usually. But if you only want one or two, it's a dollar. Next. And some software bundles. You can get a whole bunch of games. Again, they tend to be more pricey, more than a dollar, to start with for one or two games. And then $30 or $40 for more. And you can get a whole bunch of stuff. If you're a YouTube creator or podcast creator, then you can collect music, vintage radio and broadcast stuff, all of which is free of copyright. You have permission to use it. So you can collect 104 items, so animals and birds, different music, cartoons, and so on. Okay, now on to the demo. Oh, here's some of the current games that they have for sale directly. Now, I don't know any of these. I don't think I've played any of these, so good luck. Okay, I think now we're on to the demo.
Great. So,
and in case you didn't notice, Tom, you muted yourself again.
You locked it up, too.
Someone picked it up and walked it.
Someone picked it up and walked away with it.
So it wasn't tied to anything.
I'm here. I was unmuting myself with the space bar. So when I let go of the space bar, I became... So I want to share my screen. So... share. Humble Bundle and share.
Got it.
This should be it.
Yep.
You can see it all?
Yep.
So this is Humble Bundle, and this is, as you can see, there are, I've got a curated mix of PC games. So there's a variety of things that you can get. They have a variety of things for sale. You can join now. I guess they have a monthly thing. I don't know. I don't go into that. The featured stuff, you can buy games, $80, $73, IGN Live, whatever that is, International Games Network. I don't know. But here are the bundles. These are the things that I'm interested in. This is a games bundle. These are all games bundles. Games. But, these are the books bundles. Pay what you want. RPG Game Master. If you're running a game, you can get a book that has all kinds of suggestions. For example, for Dungeon Masters. 2 days left. Pay what you want. Case and Consequence Collection. This is a games bundle. Here's another books collection. This is books about these games. Now, I don't know how many games people are interested. But this is a bundle for machine learning, AI, and bots. This is the comics bundle if you want to see a bunch of comics, and another games bundle. So let's look.
We lost your audio again, Tom.
Okay, now my audio is on full time, and my space bar doesn't do funny things. So these are, this is membership. So I don't want membership. I want to go back to this one, which is books, machine learning, AI, and bots, master machine learning. You can play 138, and I don't know why. Can't see all of the things here, all the pictures. And I'm disappointed. I'm sorry, I didn't check this out, but the pictures, they should show the pictures of all the books. But you can choose, okay, 138 or more, and up to, in this case, $50 for all of them. And there are a bunch of books, and here's what I do when I buy something, and usually I can see what I'm buying. So this is a little weird. So I can pay $138, but when you pay $138, you can choose. You get one item. You're missing out on 15 more items. Pay at least $34 to get all the items, but you can't adjust the donation. And you have a choice of default donation, extra to charity. But what I always do is custom amount, and then I go, this is for Code for America, which is a charity, and now I'm giving 96 cents of my $1, one U.S. dollar to Code for America. I give 1 cent to the publisher, which is O'Reilly, and 41 cents to Humble, because, this is Canadian dollars, sorry. And this cannot be reduced. In fact, this is the lowest amount. Humble Bundle will always get about a third. So then you can buy and go back up here and check out. And this is the book. I don't know what book I'm getting yet. I may already have it, but I'll spend my money. Humble Choice Order Summary, and I will pay with PayPal. And actually, I already have an account with them. You can have an account without actually paying anything. It's not a membership. And I go to find out my password. Oh, that's quite a password. It's quite long. Log into account. And this is the code is sent to my email address, which is Combo Bundle, account protection, and the code is, I'll just paste it in and verify. Okay, so this is my book bundle. I still have to pay for it, which is PayPal. And continue the payments. PayPal. And put in my password and a security check. Oh no, I don't. Sometimes, at any rate. It doesn't want to, it doesn't like me. Turn this off too. Everything's whitelisted. Come on, work. Well, oh, I am human.
Demo gods are against you, Tom.
I am human. There I am. I think I'm human.
Okay, well, I don't know that we have to watch the whole checkout process. I think everybody's familiar enough with buy-in online.
I agree. I think, after this, well, when it works, I suppose I need to use one of my different browsers. When this works, at the end, you have the choice of downloading it right away, or you can wait for the email that will actually send you a link. And then you have the choice of downloading it in all the different formats. So my suggestion is you may want to look at Humble Bundle. And there are various promos that they have, various games, and you may want to get on their email list to get a list of these things.
Very cool.
And when you do, remember to give a lot to charity. And I guess that's it. Back to you.
One of the things I noticed, Tom, when I was looking at this website, they might have 18 books in the bundle, but then they have like sub-bundles. You can buy 3 books or 5 books. And what you're saying is you can actually buy 1 book if you want.
Well, they have prices. They have 4 or 5 prices ranging from one U.S. dollar up to, I think one of the ones was $50. And you usually have several choices of a bundle. The low bundle may have maybe 1 or 2 or 3 books or one game. The other bundles will have more and more until you get to the full bundle where you can get 105 books for for $35.21. I think the upper values seem to vary, and of course, if there's a lot of demand, then they increase the minimum price to get all of the books. But that's my guess. In any case,
dynamic pricing.
I believe so.
Yeah.
So you may find it. I find it most valuable for finding technical books on different areas like this AI and other things. Other people may like the games or books that are on games. It's up to you whether these things interest you.
So there's a question. If there's a bundle of, say, 18 books, and you're specifically interested in 4 of them, Can you choose just those four?
You cannot choose those four. However, you can take a look at each bundle from $1 to $35 and choose the cheapest bundle that has the four books that you want.
Okay.
Of course, that may be the most expensive bundle.
And there's a question here from Elizabeth. Are all the books e-books? Is that right?
Yes, they are.
Okay. Okay, thanks very much, Tom. I guess everybody can go check out or Humble Bundle. Okay.
And back to Alan.
There we go. All right. So next up, we have another follow-up. This time, it's from who else but Chris.
Yeah. Okay. So vulnerability management, everybody knows that I'm a bit of a freak when it comes to security. And vulnerability management is certainly one of the pillars that most people, I think, should be concerned about. So I think it's a given that, you know, most software that's out there on the market, other than truly trivial software, probably has security flaws. Maybe most have security flaws, and it's just a question about who finds them first, the company that wrote the software who can fix the problem, or the hacker who can exploit it. And so if it does get exploited by an attacker, before you get a patch on your system that corrects the flaw, or before the company gets out a patch for the flaw, all kinds of things could happen. So certainly things like identity theft and file loss, and, you know, they could take over your computer completely and do anything that you can do on your computer. Vulnerability management software, what it's designed to do is it looks at the software that you have installed on your computer, and it finds when there's a case where you're running a version that has security vulnerabilities, and a patch is available to fix the vulnerability, is the aim of the whole thing. Some software may assist you in actually downloading the patch as well. Some of them may just make you go off and do it on your own. So there's vulnerability managers and update managers, and they're really critically different. So vulnerability manager really only cares about security vulnerabilities in software. If there's a new version of the program that just has new features and things like that, a vulnerability manager, by and large, will just ignore it. So they're looking for, is there a newer version of the program that fixes the security vulnerability? Or is there a vulnerability in the current version and no patches available? They may actually tell you about that as well, just so that maybe there's workarounds that you can actually do to protect yourself from that particular vulnerability. A vulnerability manager is what I want. I don't particularly care about new versions of the program that just add new features or things like that. I may care, but I'm not going to need to react to it immediately. On the other hand, if there is an update available that fixes security vulnerabilities, I'll take it all the time because I just don't know if I'm going to be a target of some attacker who will find out about the security vulnerability, reverse engineer the patch, and then go attacking people who have not updated to the latest version of the program. On the other hand, an update manager only cares if a new version is available, period. So it might fix security vulnerabilities. There's just usually no way for you to tell. The update manager will just tell you there's a newer version available. The problem can be if it's not free. So in that case, you have to decide whether you want to pay for that update, even if maybe it doesn't fix security vulnerabilities. Now, if the program is free, by and large, I don't consider it to be a problem. I'll just go ahead and update, even if it's just, you know, adding new features or general bug fixes rather than security problems. So if an update doesn't fix vulnerability, I might not update. I'll look at it critically and decide whether I want to bother upgrading or not. So at some of our Q&A discussions, we've discussed vulnerability and update managers quite a few times, and three programs that we've looked at is PatchMyPC Home Updater, Glarisoft Software Update, and Sectier Vuln Detect. And I pasted this into the chat as well. So there's the Q&A sessions where we've talked about those. But one thing that we never did, we never really did a comparison between those different programs. We talked individually about the individual programs and said what we liked and didn't like about it, but we never actually compared the effectiveness between all of those. And we never looked beyond those programs to say, is there something new, a new kid on the block who is going to do update management or vulnerability management, and what can we learn about it? So there are free programs around, and the update managers, I pasted those URLs in there as well. And the one that is the newer one is the Uni Get UI, and that'll talk about tonight. The other ones, I will compare some of the things, but UniGet UI is something that we haven't talked about yet at Q&A. Now, interestingly, the first three are update managers. The fourth one, Secondary Vulnerability Detect, is actually a vulnerability and an update manager. So we will actually tell you if it's something that is fixing vulnerabilities or if it's just an update for which there is no known security problems with that particular program. So how did they do? So I looked at on my computer, and this is, you know, just a shot on one computer, so your mileage may vary, but I looked at Patch My PC Home Updater. Keep in mind, it's an update manager, not a vulnerability manager, so it's just going to tell you there's a newer version of the program, period. They have a published list of programs that they actually monitor for updates, and currently it stands at 532 programs. Found on my computer programs that needed or there were updates available. Again, I don't know if it's security updates or just functionality and things like that. But the NVIDIA app for my video card, the Opera browser, and pCloud, which is a cloud syncing app, it said there was a newer version available for all three of those. What it missed on my computer, which was interesting, eShampoo Photo Recovery. There's a newer version available. That was found by Garysoft, but, you know, the Patch My PC didn't find it. TextPad, it was also found by Garysoft. Balina Etcher, which Alan has talked about for creating from an ISO file a bootable flash drive, and that was found by both Garysoft and UniGet UI. And then, interestingly, the rest of them on here were only found by VulnDetect. The first one was really intriguing. It's because it's components of other apps. So, for example, OpenVPN, that is actually a component that is included with TunnelBear, which is a VPN piece of software I have on my computer. Now, I don't know, like there's a vulnerability in the OpenVPN component that is included with TunnelBear latest version. And I don't know if I can actually fix that. So it's a little bit of a conundrum on that. And then the Wacom tablet driver for my Cintiq pen display. And then portable apps, which was also very interesting. Portable apps are found by VulnDetect. And those are applications that don't require an actual setup program to run. You just run the executable period, and it runs the program. And so there's nothing added to the registry. There's nothing added to the start menu. And most other programs, like Patch My PC, don't find those portable apps. They don't go looking for random executables on your hard drive. So let's look at Glarysoft. Actually, I think I had a spelling mistake on the other one. I said Garysoft, and it's Glarysoft. So again, it's an update manager. They don't publish a list of apps that they monitor. Now, some third party claimed that it was about 130 apps. I suspect it's a much larger number than that. So what did it find on my computer? That newer versions were available. The eShampoo Photo Recovery, TextPad, Balina Etcher, and pCloud. Note that TextPad, I know that that's not a free update. So I don't know if there's a security vulnerability in the version that I'm actually running, but I do know it would cost me money to upgrade to version 8.22. So what did it miss on my computer? Well, it missed the NVIDIA app that was found by Patch My PC, an Opera browser, which was found by Patch My PC. And I found that intriguing because I'm surprised that any major browser is not picked up by any update manager at all. And then all the rest of them, the components of other apps were missed. The Wacom tablet driver and my portable apps were not found. They were all found by VulnDetect. So let's look at SecDir Vulnerability Detect. So it's an update manager and a vulnerability manager. So they don't publish a list of apps they monitor, but they say it's about 1,800 applications. You also can, if you think that they're not actually detecting some software on your computer, there is a website, a blog that they maintain where you can actually request that they add additional programs to their list that they'll monitor. I've done that, and I think I sent them a list of four, and two of them actually have been added. The other two, it seems so far, haven't been added. So it found vulnerabilities on my computer. And again, this is a vulnerability manager and an update manager. So it found three vulnerabilities on my computer, and those were in those components of other apps. And you can see where they highlight where they actually found it. So the 7-zip was actually installed as part of my video card drivers, because it's under Program Files, NVIDIA Corporation. And TunnelBear was the OpenVPN component. And the Python vulnerability, that came from Inkscape that installed it on my computer. So typically you can't update that component of another program, or there's no guarantee that everything will work properly if you try to update just that component. So in the update manager portion of it, it found that there were a number of updates available: Opera pCloud, TreeSize Professional, which was missed by others, Wacom Tablet Driver, SysInternals AutoRun, and KeePass, which are both portable apps. It found those ones, but again, this was an update portion, not the vulnerability. So the current versions I have on my computer, there are no known security vulnerabilities. So what did it miss?
Sorry, Chris, I suspect you're right there, because when you look at that Python, and the Python executable is actually buried in the Inkscape folder.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you upgraded Python in Windows, that wouldn't affect that location, I don't think.
No, and I think that because of that, I doubt very much if my computer is vulnerable to an attack through Python, because if somebody comes up with a Python script that they want me to run, it's not going to run the executable for Python that is buried in underneath the Inkscape folder structure, I don't think. So
yeah, the reason they have the outdated ones in as part of the program is when they're installing, they code their installer based on that version of that patch or that program. So if you put in a newer version, it may not install properly.
Yeah, it may not, and it might not work properly either. But I complained to all three of these vendors and said, why are you distributing versions of a component, an open source component, that has known security vulnerabilities? I heard back from TunnelBear people, and they said that they would address it for the OpenVPN portion, and the next update did include an updated OpenVPN, but about a week later, there was a new security vulnerability found, and so they were back in the same state. So I stopped complaining to the people about that. I suspect it's not actually an issue, but it is interesting that it can find the vulnerability in those components within another component. So let's look at UniGet UI. So it's an update manager, doesn't talk about vulnerabilities at all, and it uses six package repositories or package managers to actually do its work. So WinGet, was first put up by Microsoft. I don't know if it's Microsoft that actually maintains it, but it includes Microsoft Store apps, and there's currently 8,000, well, as of last week when I ran the check on it, there was 8,841 applications that are distributed through the Microsoft Store, and it includes lots of software: Chocolaty Scoop, Pip, NPM, and PowerShell Gallery. They are lesser known repositories, but they do have a lot of things that they can check to see whether there's a newer version available. So it can only update programs that are available through a supported repository, and that can be a problem, because some programs are only available through a standard installation setup program that you would download from the vendor. So, for example, I use on OneFoto Raw as my photo editor. It's never going to be in WinGet or any of the other repositories, I'm sure. The only way you can get it is you go to the OnOne website and you download the program from there. This is going to especially happen on commercial programs that you have to pay for. And I think the biggest reason for it is that it can be really difficult for a vendor to publish in a repository and still charge for the program. It's not impossible. There are means you can do, you can go through to do it. But I think a lot of vendors just decided, no, we won't put it into the repository. If you want our program, come to our website and get it. So a bonus that you get with UniGet UI, you can actually search for and install new programs through this interface. And it's kind of cool. You can just search for anything. If it shows up in any of the repositories, you can go ahead and do the install. Once it's installed, UniGet UI will automatically keep things up to date. So it's kind of nice. So how did it actually do? So it found on my computer 18 programs that needed updates. Now, I say here, to be fair to the other programs that I've talked about, I did update from UniGet UI before getting screenshots from the other programs, so they may have caught some of these as well. I don't know. But in this case, at any rate, when I ran it, it found 18 programs, and all I had to do was leave them all checked, click on the update selected packages, and it chugged away, and it updated them all. Almost. So what did it miss on my computer? So it didn't pick up the NVIDIA app, eShampoo, TextPad, which, again, is a commercial program. It doesn't find components of other apps, and it doesn't find portable apps. And it doesn't update all of them. This was an interesting one. It did an update attempt, and it failed on Microsoft Visual's C++ modules. And I thought that was kind of curious because why would they say that a newer version is available, and then it came back and said, no available upgrade found. And so I just thought it's not worth worrying about. You can actually flag something as just ignore this in the future so that it doesn't nag you every couple of hours saying that an update is available. It should get updated by Windows Update anyways. So I was new to this idea of software repositories, and something just, you know, I didn't feel familiar enough with it. So I asked Alan to try it out because Alan is very familiar with software repositories coming from the Linux world because that is the standard method for software installation in Linux. And Alan got an error, WinGet malfunction detected. And there's a button right there saying repair WinGet. And then the program worked correctly. And then he exited the program, went in, and it said WinGet malfunction detected. And it would work as long as he didn't exit the program and come back in. Every time he went into the program, it came up with that error, and he would have to click on the repair WinGet. Who knows what was causing that? So Alan has no commercial apps on his computer except for Microsoft 365. So I figured, well, he should not have an issue with an update manager recommending an update that's going to cost some money because he's just got free software. Except he had a recommendation that he should update 143 Python modules. And in Alan's words, I don't update Python stuff until something doesn't work. Updating can make things not work. And if he just deselected one of the repositories where that was coming from, the pip repository, he stopped getting bugged about that. But in the end, Alan just gave up on UniGet UI and decided not to bother with it. So the conclusions on this, every one of the programs that I tried out, they will find some things that others miss. And, you know, should I run all of them? Maybe. They're free programs, so, and they're all point-in-time running. So, well, most of them are point-in-time running. And so you just, they're not impacting the performance of your computer running in the background or anything like that. And so why not? If I didn't want to run all of them, I would choose Secure Vuln Detect and UniGet UI. Both of them do run in the background, and so they will pick up on things as time goes on, even if you forget about it. The reason why I picked those two, Secure Vuln Detect, it is a vulnerability manager. Okay, that's the only one that I've tried that actually looks for security vulnerabilities, and it does update management as well. And the interesting is it finds those portable apps that are missed by others, which I think is really important. UniGet UI, I like that because of the huge number of programs that are handled. There's over 10,000 programs. WinGet alone has that 8841. Plus you have all those JavaScript, Python, and so forth that are available through other package managers. But it did miss a lot of programs that are not available through package managers. So those ones you have to either be diligent about going to the vendor or use another program such as SecDirVel and Detect or the other two to see if any of them are popping up to see, say that something else is available. I will probably continue using Glarisoft and patch my PC occasionally. I'm not going to run them all, you know, once a week or anything like that, but I do think that I will run them periodically to see what they find. Also on conclusions, be careful of program updates. So if you have an update in a paid-for piece of software, you know, it might not be a free upgrade. So something like TextPad going from 7.6 to 8.22, I know that that's not free. And if you do manage to do the update, there's a chance, first off, the program won't run until you pay for the upgrade. Or worse, it might be impossible or difficult to get back to the version that you actually did pay for and have rights to use. Any updates in free programs, I think there's less danger involved in that. So new versions could still have unwanted behaviors. So it's always good to check what is new in programs before you decide to do the upgrade if there's no known security vulnerability. And it probably is going to be easier to return to the previous version, you know, if you do not like the newer version of the free program. And in the words of the Sophos Naked Security podcast, stay secure. And that's it for that.
A question, Chris.
Yep.
Do any of these programs allow you or have a setting whereby they keep the previous version installation file or they keep the one installation file that they downloaded and executed?
None of them do that at all. To my knowledge, I've never seen any indication that they allow you to do that, which is a good case in point, especially free programs and things like that, is if you, any program, if you download something you're going to be installing on your computer, I keep a directory structure on a side drive that is called updates. And I have it by vendor, directories below that, and then by program. And I keep the download for at least one version back so that if I do have to go back, that I have a means that will probably work to be able to go back to a previous version.
But if you use these package updaters, then you may not have the previous version.
That's true. Yeah.
I guess you can always use the package updaters if you just take note of what needs updating and then update it yourself, but of course that's more work.
Yeah, it'd be an awful lot more work for sure, but that would be a way of usually you'd be able to get that installation package from the vendor. The one you're not going to be able to do that is Windows Store Apps. I don't know of any way that you can actually preserve older versions of Windows Store Apps, and we're getting more and more of those that are coming available. So most of those, it's sort of like phones. They just expect you to always be on the latest, and they don't make it easy for you to be on anything but the latest version.
And you can always have Macrium Reflect do an incremental every morning.
It's not all that helpful if you decide that, you know, a week later you decide, oh, I really don't like this update, and to try to roll back your whole computer to a week before or 2 weeks before.
Well, no, you just pick and choose the ones that you want to roll back and just pull that out of the image.
I don't know. Windows Store App, I'm not sure it'd be all that easy to actually do Windows Store App.
From the Macrium image, you can just pull out the ones that you want to roll back.
Yeah, I know, but how would you pick out, like, say you download a screensaver from the Windows Store? You know, I don't know how you would actually isolate that in your Macrium Reflect that you could actually roll back to a previous version of that particular app.
Just search for the directories and then just replace the directories with those from the image.
I'm not sure that that's a viable option, actually, because there's probably all kinds of registries. There could be all kinds of registry issues with that. I don't know. I've never tried it, but I wouldn't be surprised if something didn't work by just replacing what's in the directory.
Yeah, there's more than one. You have to go into program data and then the program files and
Program 6
and rest of it to make sure you've got them all
I think
the directories, but that's about it.
Yeah.
As I recall, there are some programs that that actually kind of take a snapshot of the registries and so on beforehand when you do an install, and then it does, then you do the install, and then you can then undo it. I don't recall the name of them, the ones that I've seen, and it probably wouldn't work with the package managers. It probably only work if you did an install and then wanted to roll that particular install back.
Yeah. So that's what System Restore is supposed to do, but it does a pathetic job of it.
Yeah, it's a problematic function for sure. Claudette has a question. Microsoft doesn't like us to use apps that are not in the stores. How do you suggest to deal with third-party apps not supported by Microsoft? I don't know. It's not an easy thing. If they have their own installation program, again, when you download it from the vendor, keep a copy of the old ones, and then if you have to go back, uninstall the current version and reinstall the older version. If it is a third-party app that is available through the Microsoft Store, which there's certainly over 8,000 of them that are other vendors, again, I don't know how you would effectively do that. Okay, that's all I have on that.
Yeah, Tom's saying that System Restore has saved his bacon, and I'm just saying System Restore has never worked for me. It's never worked for me.
Saved his bacon because it's a real pig, yeah. I like
it. All right, we've... about 5 minutes left, and we've been having lots of questions as we've been going along, so if anybody has any other questions...
Well, what gets me with that System Restore thing, when you try to restore it, you can actually restore faster with Macrium Reflect than that silly System Restore crap. Talk about a misnomer. It does nothing of the sort. It doesn't restore a damn thing, and it certainly doesn't do your system. All it does is just take a snapshot of parts of the registry. You can do the same thing by just copying a bunch of the keys out of the registry.
That's not my understanding. It's it basically uses the NTFS is a journaling file system, so it has like multiple backups built into it. And I believe that System Restore does not only restores the registry, but it also restores the files themselves back to where they were. This is data, but it's also programs. I've used it mainly to come back from where I've messed up the OS in some way and things have gotten lost.
Yeah.
But that's my main use for it. I haven't used it for particular programs. I don't think so anyway.
It can definitely roll back drivers to a previous state. And that can be a real problem with Windows because drivers run at ring zero on the processor. So they have a lot of power and can cause problems for sure if you have a bad driver. So System Restore will restore driver state.
Yeah, I think that it actually restores the system to a point in time, right?
Yeah, it doesn't do data files, so it doesn't do data files. So it's strictly the operating system and drivers. And I'm not sure how much they do of other programs, but yeah, it is definitely more than just the registry hives, but they are definitely included in it.
Yeah, but it's clearly it's a program that has mixed reviews, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to try and skip some slides here because I don't think we've got time for. Oops, didn't want to do that.
let's do the one of converting pages. Because I think Claudette, she's on the call tonight. She was the one who asked that in advance, so it'd be good if we actually cover that.
Okay, that will be around 36.
Yeah, go back. Okay, I can take it back from there. Oh, yeah, we're going to go back. Oops, gone too far. Okay, here we have Claudette, who is on the call tonight, and so I think it's good she sent it in advance to suggestion box, so we should cover it off. So she sent in a message, and she was looking for a file converter to open .pages files, which is an Apple page layout software. And she wanted to open those in Windows 11 without having to use iCloud or asking the sender to change the format to .docx. That one line there is important to what I did looking forward. So she found, she thought that apps available in Google no longer considered safe, and didn't find any sign that PDF converters in the Microsoft Store would convert Pages documents. And she just needed very occasional use and wondered why it wasn't as simpler. So I went looking, and I found a number of pre-options, and again, because she talked about converting to .docx, I specifically looked for free conversion programs that would do from .pages, Apple Pages, files to .docx, which are Microsoft Word files. And all of the ones that you see here don't require installation of software on your computer. They're all web-based. The first one, Cloud Convert, you can do 10 files per day for free. File Convert allows you to do 20 files per day for free. Zamzar is only two. One of the things that's interesting about Zamzar is they have probably 30,000 different conversions that they can actually do. So if you need to convert anything to from anything to anything, check out Zamzar. You can only do two conversions per day for free, but that's still not bad. And then Online Convert, they say you get 16 credits, and this is a one-time 16 credits, and then you're done. They say most conversions require one credit. It's actually about processing power to actually do the conversion. It might cost more than one credit. And then the last three on the slide, there is no indication that there's any limitations on the number of conversions that you can actually do. And the last URL there, I found an interesting article, Beware of Pitfalls in Online File Converters. Dates back a little bit, 2022, but was an interesting article to read. And that was it for that. Do we want to cut it off there, or do we want to cover some extras?
Well, Claudette had another question in the earlier there that she'd read somewhere that Microsoft was going to abandon passwords and go to something else, and how would that affect us? And I think that must relate to passkeys, which is a public-private key cryptography system. And I did a little thing on a Q&A a little while back. I don't remember exactly when. You can check in the index to find out where it is. But it talks about this public-private key encryption system. And I don't think they're going to be – Microsoft's going to be changing this anytime soon, because my experience was – I couldn't get passkeys to work, even with Microsoft, my Microsoft account, and the reason was that it's not supported by Windows 10. So I can't see them moving completely away from passwords until Windows 10 is no more. So I think you've got at least 4 months to not worry about it.
Yes. Yeah, it's a little bit spotty about passkey support and how it's supported by various programs. It varies. Password managers, some of them can handle passkeys, some of them can't. There's limitations about how many devices you can actually have your passkeys on sometimes, and it's a real problem. I've avoided passkeys for the most part until now.
Looks like a really secure system, though, once it actually works.
Yeah.
Anyway, something to bear in mind. There's lots of information about passkeys on the web, Ask Leo tutorials, and I think Chris Barnett explaining computers. And there's all kinds of information. Just check out passkeys on the web, and you'll find all kinds of good stuff. Okay, wrapping up. We had a couple of issues today about YouTube videos. And I'm sure everybody uses YouTube, and you probably have things that are of interest to you, which are probably of interest to others. And we have this YouTube tech series as part of our Q&A session. So if you have a YouTube video that you really like, or a channel that you watch or you subscribe to that you recommend, just tell us about it. But when you're looking at YouTube videos, this is YouTube tech, right? Technical things, and as I say, we don't want any cute cats. Unless it's a computer-based cat, I guess. Okay, our upcoming presentations from the club with the library. And Chris is going to be talking about free AI tools at Beaverbrook on the 19th, which is tomorrow at 6 o'clock. Saturday, Linda is going to be doing an armchair travel series item on Norway. That's at Nepean Centre Point, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And if you haven't seen Chris's Fun with Fonts, then you have to be at Carlingwood on June the 30th to learn about typography.
And Alan, I'm also doing one at Carlingwood on the 23rd about British Columbia, armchair travel British Columbia.
Yeah, okay, sorry. This is just a selection. And if you go to the link down the bottom of the page there, that takes you to a page where all of our OPCUG presentations are listed. And, of course, you have to go there because you have to register with the library and to reserve a spot on the at the session. But as Chris says, it's full show-up anyway, and there's bound to be some no-shows.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks, everyone, for your attendance tonight. Thanks to Tom for his share on Humble Bumble. We'll check that out. And next week we'll have another Q&A session, so if you have questions that we haven't answered, I'm sure Chris and I are going to be taking a look at the results of that poll. And if you've got topics like Tom that you would like to share, tell us about those too, and we'll put a fabulous agenda together for June the 25th. So we'll see you then.
Thanks much, folks.